which will enlarge what we did in those papers and provide some new results that I will go over briefly also. So I will talk about both loops in four-dimensional manifolds for young males, and it has a gauge field from which we want to build the Wilson loop, and if I talk about the Wilson-Gridian space, and there are of course also Fermi fields that will not play any role, and six scalars that are around. And in this talk, I'll present results both from the gauge theory side and from ADS, and I'll jump in between them relatively. I hope this is not too confusing, and you've already heard about the relation between this gauge theory and ADS 5 process 5. The Wilson loops are described by large strings that end on cropping. Now, this theory has a very large symmetry group, PS, from 2 through 4, whose even part is the conformal group times the R symmetry group. And here I listed all the symmetry generators, rotation, translations, special conformal transformations, the dilation. Then we have the SU4, so 6 rotations. And finally, the supersymmetries. These are the standard congruent supersymmetries, and the S's are the superconformal symmetries. And in what I'll say, both of them will play a role. There are special operators that preserve some supersymmetries. Those are the EPS operators. So, as an illustration, a very simple illustration, I will consider a local operators made out of scalar fields. So consider this complex combination x, y, and z. And each is charged under one subgroup of SO6. And it is easy to show that operators made out of only holomorphic combinations of those fields will preserve some supersymmetry. So, for example, the variation of z to the j, of trace z to the j, will be proportional to j times z to the j minus 1, and then one of the Fermi fields. Then this combination of gamma matrices and a parameter epsilon of the supersymmetry variation. These are the gamma matrices of SO6, the rows. And epsilon includes a constant part, which is related to the q's, and a part which is linear in x, which is related to the s's. For this combination to vanish, if the operator is in the origin, you can just take arbitrary epsilon 1, and this combination will vanish. This means that z to the j is annihilated by all the s's. In addition, a combination row 5 plus I row 6 is nilpotent, it has half of its eigenvalue 0, and so half the component of epsilon naught could be not 0, and it will, this entire expression will be 0. So we conclude that z to the j is divided by all the s's. Such an operator is a chiral primary, and if you act with all the other cubes that don't annihilate it, you will create a multiplicative phenomenon. Now, a lot of non-local operators that are the supersymmetric ones have preserved dimensions and three-point functions, and even recently a lot has been learned about operators that are not supersymmetric. And the spectrum is there are many conjectures for what the spectrum is, especially in the length of large for large operators. And that's the whole story of those spin chains. But will not talk about that here. I will also really not talk about drop-off rates. This is just an example to illustrate what I'm going to do now for Wilson loops. Wilson loops can also be supersymmetric, but much less is known about the classification of supersymmetric Wilson loops. And of course, the reason those operators are interesting is that they are non-local, and in a confining theory, they would exhibit the area model. So that's not our case, but still, they're non-local and provide some extra data on the theory beyond local operators. On the string theory dual, they're described as semi-classical strings or interpretations by higher dimensional brains, 3 brains or 5 brains, and therefore they touch directly on stringy properties of the gauge theory. So that's another reason why they are interesting. So, since this is a gauge theorem, and we have a gauge theorem, we can construct Wilson loop as the trace of the holography around a pad X. But these operators are generally not supersymmetric. To find supersymmetric operators, you will need to add some extra couplings to the Fermi fields or to the scalars. And the combination that I will consider in this talk is this one, proposed by Malvicena, where in addition to the gauge field, I add a coupling to the scalars by I, 6 of the scalars by I. And here, X dot is to make this reparentization invariant, and theta I's are some couplings that can, in principle, depend on the path. And now, the question I want to ask is, how does one choose those thetas to get supersymmetric operators? So, let me tell you what I'm going to do the rest of the talk. So, we're about the introduction of motivation. I will go over one family of Wilson loops that are supersymmetric and were constructed by Zelenko. Then I will show you another family, a family we reconstructed for an arbitrary curve on S3 inside space-time. I will show you what these give you inside, how those strings, properties of the string solution in APS5 that describe those Wilson loops. Then I will go over some examples, special examples, for special curves living on S3, either a big circle, which will be half BPS, quarter BPS. We have 3 different examples, either half fibers of S3, or if we take S2 subspace, a latitude curve or a few longitudes. You'll see that later. For a general observable on S2, turns out to be 0.8 BPS, and we can also recover is an equilibrium and some limit. But I didn't say general curve on S3 will be 116 BPS. Finally, I will say how we can find we have evidence that when the loop is on S2, it is analogous to the calculation of a Wilson loop in 2-dimensional windows on S2. So hence the title of my talk is called 4-dimensional theory, which has supersymmetry, and I restrict the operator living on S2, and I do something clever about the scalar coupling, and the result is the same as the 2-dimensional theory. And this 2-dimensional theory is actually related to 0-dimensional theory to a matrix model. So that's what I'm going to talk about. So first, let me review a very clever but simple construction of the Zelenko, the first big class of supersymmetric Wilson loops. So we start by considering just a single straight line going in the x1 direction, and we couple it to the scalar phi 1. So this is the Wilson loop that we've written there. The same way as I did with the local operator, the supersymmetry variation will now be proportional to the combination of gamma matrices that are associated with these fields and the parameter of supersymmetry in the Hilbert spaces. And here I have gamma 1, which is a space-time gamma matrix, and rho 1, which is an associated gamma matrix. And this combination is nilpotent, and therefore this loop is half the PS. Half of the Qs and half of the S's annihilated. Now, I can also take, instead of this curve, I can take a curve, a straight line in the x2 direction, and couple it to the scalar phi2. Well, I didn't really do much. I will get this projector. And so, this on itself is happy PS, but this projector commutes with this projector, and therefore the combined system of the two straight lines is 1/4 PS. But here comes the clever idea. Is that I will consider an arbitrary curve in the 1-2 plane, and I'll just make sure that when that the scalar coupling is proportional to the tangent vector to the curve. And then I will always get a linear combination of this and this, and they will be solved by these two, by the same epsilon. So the same supersymmetries. So here I have some matrix that will relate the space-time index to the scalar index. So we can immediately see that if we have curve confined to a straight line, and we have this scalar coupling, it will be half UPS. If it's in a plane, it will be a quarter. If it's in R3, it will be 1/8. And for a completely arbitrary curve in R4, if we add these scalar couplings in this specified way, we're going to get 1/16 BPS operator. So we have a very large family of supersymmetric operators for an arbitrary curve. Now notice, you have to always remember, what I'm doing, I'm always doing something with the scalars to make sure that it's supersymmetric. If I took an arbitrary scalar coupling, this will not work. We always have an arbitrary curve in space, and I adjust the scalar coupling to the supersymmetry. Now, quite amazingly, these loops have trivial expectation values. Their depth is 1. And you can see it both in the gauge theory and the string theory. And there are arguments, there are explicit calculations to Q-loop orders, and there are arguments why they should apply beyond integration theory. I find this work very interesting, quite amazing, but there isn't much to do with those operators. They're just one. You can't calculate anything. And also, this family does not include a half-UPS circular. So if you just take a circle and couple it to a single scalar, you get an operator which is half-UPS, but it's not included in this family. In this family, if you take a circle, then you're in the plane, you need two scalars that you couple to a periodic wave, and it will be 1/4 UPS. And this half-UPS circle has a non-trivial depth. So we should look for more operators similar to this circle, and there should be more to find out there. So that's what I'm going to do with this. So, in Zaleplo's case, effectively you had a Wilson loop where the connections, there would be a mu is a u plus I phi u, where phi u is given by this matrix multiplying by this phi. It's just a way of choosing four of the scalars and attaching to them space-time index. This is actually related to a topological twist where you relate some R symmetries and space-time symmetries. But if you're afraid of topological theories, you don't. It will not play any role. So, what I will do is use a different twist, where I will relate, instead of relating the scalars, rewrite them as four of the scalars as a vector. I will take three of the scalars and write them as a self-dual tensor. And for that, I have again some matrix, but in addition, I have this sigma. And it is the composition of the generators of the Lorentz group, the generators of the Lorentz group in the anti-chiral representation and the entire Pauli matrices. So if I have an anti-chiral spinner, the action of the Pauli, of the Lorentz group generators, gamma mu nu, is given if there are just going to be some Pauli matrices with these coefficients, set sigma mu nu pi. And so this will play a role a little bit later, but otherwise you can just think of them as a tensor of three indices. Those are also essentially the same as the Hopf symbol, eta, which is used in constructing instant Hopf solution. And they are also related to the invariant one forms on S3. So my loops are going to live on S3, which is the group that I call SU2. And then you have the left and right forms on that. And so in Cartesian coordinates, the left and right forms are this. And then the form sigma I is going to be related to this index, sigma I mu mu times x mu e x mu, which will also play a role a little bit later. So now I want to write my Wilson loop with this replacement of the connection AU is replaced by AU times now this A, this combination that I made out of this anti-special tensor that is built out of scalars times XU. Here is another way of writing it as forms, this AU DXU, and here I have these one forms multiplied by phi. So those are different ways of writing these operators. And you see, now this is all these structures are very specific for S3. My curve will live on S3, and I will take an arbitrary curve, and always the scalar coupling is then fixed by this or by this. It just hangs it up. Theory, by the way, can be on S3 cross R or on R4, but my loops are going to be restricted to an S3 subspace.
So if you say
kind of twist
for which group are you twisting by which?
I am twisting the right group of you. I'll get there explicitly in a second, but SU2 right, I'm relating to an SU2 inside SW6, where that is the, if I chose your three scalars, that is the SU2 or these three scalars are their triplets.
So it's the same as in Paul's Whitman theory or something like this?
Yes. It's, well, that's N equals 2, but this is the N equals 4 translation of it. It's the one studied in the original paper of Hoffman and Whitman. There's a Okay, so far I just wrote it. Now I have to show you that it's actually supersymmetric. And to do that, I take in the variation of the Wilson loop. This is what the gauge fields give me, and this is what the scalar term gives me. This is sigma times x, x dot times x, and the Gauss matrix, and this is times this Kelly spinner. That's this. Now, the Kelly spinner had a part which was constant, and had a part which was conformal, and was proportional to x and the Gauss matrix. So, that's not has terms with a Gauss matrix and without a Gauss matrix. When I multiply them, I will get terms with 0, 1, or 2 Gauss matrices. Let me look at the terms with 0 and 2 Gauss matrices. So, it's the term from here acting on the term of the Gauss matrix here, the term from here acting on the term of the Gauss matrix here. So, I get gamma mu nu from here acting on epsilon 1. The guy related to S's, superconformal generators, and I have the thing from here acting on epsilon not usual Q generators. There's going to be another term with just one term matrix, but actually the equation that I get from that matching will be solved by the solution of this. So one way to solve the entire system is to demand that this will be zero. And if I want to do that for an arbitrary curve, I could drop this from the front, and I demand this combination to zero, as I've written here. And this actually can be solved in general, because I took these sigmas to be related to these gammas. They are these gammas in the anti-chiral for anti-chiral spins. So to solve this system, I have to pose that epsilon 1 and epsilon 0 are anti-chiral. And then I decompose them into, I have here the gamma matrix. This is related to the in the anti-chiral matrix, gamma was sigma times a Pauli matrices. So I get the Pauli matrix of the R group, SU2R, epsilon 1 is equal to this gap matrix of S of 6 acting on epsilon 1. So I have these three equations. I goes from 1 to 3. And now, if I consider the breaking of SO6, SU2, plus SU2, and B, SU2B, and I will not touch at all. And the rows will be the generators of SU2A. I can rewrite. I can eliminate epsilon naught, sorry, from the last equation. And then I get this relation for epsilon 1. Sorry, this should be a minus. And this equation tells you that under the sum of the groups, SU2R plus SU2A, this spinner should be a singlet, because all three directions, all three generators, this sum group annihilated. So it means that under the topological twisting, this is a singlet, you can write explicitly. You can write explicitly by subtracting the indices from SU2A and SU2R, alpha dot and A dot. And then you remain with a supercharge, which is a doublet under SU2B. The way this is different from the standard topological twisting is that the operators that annihilate in this loop are not the Q's, but are the contribution of Q and S. So geometrically it's the same twisting, but the operator that you want to consider as your VRST operator. So in general we have these two in supersymmetry generators that annihilate our curves, our closed loops. So we're going to be 1/16 PPS. But in special cases, we're going to have advanced supersymmetry one four. I will give some examples later. Any questions about my construction?
So the novelty here is that the tweaks involve special conformal quantum.
Yes. So actually, I think this topological theory was not studied in this with this DRST operator. And actually, these Qs do not square to zero. They square into SU2D generators. If you just take the commutator of Q with itself, it is zero. Q and S is not zero. So you have to study equivariant homology. I will not talk about this logical theory, but these observables exist in some topological version of any postmodern.
These lessons of any observable of this table, to address the claims of this, the only operator that will survive in the crystal field among the other local operators.
I'm not sure.
What in general?
Sorry?
What in general?
Well, you could hang it off loops with the same symmetry, for sure.
There might be some third cluster.
I don't know. It's not very natural for a low counter to be invariant under proof. Well, compared to an effect. If it sits on the sphere, maybe. Yeah. Okay, I don't know.
But usually, local operators are super conformal prime.
Yes.
And those are automatically killed by that. So, indeed, I don't think it's natural to have. But I mean, all of the operators that in some super conformal model are automatically killed by that. At least close.
Yes. Well, if you put your operators at the origin, but you can instead consider local operators on the same sphere as your Wilson loop. And then they are not the prime points anymore, and they're far away from that, so they can shift it by a finite distance. And then they're actually united by such a combination of Q and S. I don't know if this exact combination will kill some local operators. Okay, so I switch now. This whole discussion so far is on the H side, and now I want to say what this implies in string theory. And let me start by saying that we do not have a general solution for the surface describing those closed loops. We have a few examples where we have solutions, but I will not write down the solutions explicitly. Instead of explaining some properties of the surfaces that should describe the general loop, and there is some the construction is interesting. There is I will end up with something like the BPS equation, first order equation for the string homology. So. On the H theory side, we saw these kinds of relations between we saw them as conditions on those Killing pairs, that's on one direction or not, that gamma was equal to the sigma times the gamma of SO6. Now we can also write a similar equation when on the left hand side. You have a gamma in the row, on the right hand side you have a gamma. So if I take two gammas, I get a row, I get a gamma in a row, I get a gamma. Of course, if I take two rows, and their frequencies are just SU2 generators, I get half a row on the right-hand side. So, from once we assume that our epsilons solve these relations, which is what we imposed from the gauge theory, we find that we can view this as some multiplication rule for the gamma matrices. So in general, gamma mu is not a gamma mu mu. You cannot write it as a single gamma matrix, only in SU2. Therefore, usually this is a non-trivial, a new non-trivial operator. But when actually on those spinners, I just get a single one on the right-hand side. So this is a multiplication rule for these gap matrices, and we will use this as a guide to construct the string surfaces in ABS time process 5. So if I take the second gap matrices, and here I change to curved space indices in ABS time process 5, you can write a multiplication rule that gamma m times gamma n is equal to some generalization of that sigma, capital sigma, times gamma L. I will use this reflection on ABS 5 plus 5, and actually I only need the subspace of that because I had Wolf's group living on S3, so the bulk will extend to ABS 4. And my other, my couple points to three scalars, so they should live on an S2 subspace of S5. So for this six dimension manifold, I use these coordinates. One over this is the AKS4. Sorry, this is AKS5. Let's move over Z squared. And here I have Z squared times this combination in Z squared is equal to the inverse of these y's, and I forgot to write here the condition. There's an extra condition to reduce to ABS 4, which is that x squared plus z squared is equal to 1. So this is actually here I have seven coordinates, like that I have the seven gamma matrices, but there is one more condition on it. So these with these sigmas I can construct the matrix J, where on the right hand side is the gamma or these coordinates X. And I get this matrix J where there are these factors of z squared and z to the minus 2, scaling it, and the coordinates appear here in a funny way. But the interesting thing is that this J, this matrix, is an almost complex structure on this ABS 4 process 2. And this construction is very similar to the way you construct an almost complex structure on S6 by using the multiplication rules of the imaginary electrons. So the multiplication rules that I have here for the gamma matrices is exactly the same as the multiplication rules of protonians, of imaginary protonians, and the structure is similar to a cross product. And therefore, if I take these seven coordinates and I've built this matrix out of them, and then I add with this matrix on a tangent vector, and I impose this constraint that I didn't touch here, then I'm restricted to the six-dimensional subspace of this, then I get back a tangent vector, and if I do it twice, I get that I come back to myself. Again, with the sign universe. So, this is really an almost complex structure. What's also nice about this matrix is we can see if you take, if you go near the boundary of ADX, where Z is equal to zero, this vanishes, this vanishes, this vanishes. You're only left with this subspace, which maps you from the boundary of ADX4 to VS2. And this is exactly the map that you had of the boundary conditions for our on the these are exactly going to be the scalar couplings. If you take a path on the boundary of ADS4 or ADS3, and you act with this, you will get the scalar couplings, which are the boundary conditions on the S2 that you should have. Essentially, this sub matrix is the sequence. So it's the thing that appeared in the scalar couplings of the Wilson group. So this is an orthocomplex structure on the boundary of APS. It gives you the correct boundary conditions for a path in space. Gives you the correct path we wanted on S2. So we expect this structure to be related to the to be relevant for the strings describing our Wilson loops. And indeed, with some algebra you can show that if the string is calibrated with respect to this almost complex structure, it will preserve the same path symmetry as it should preserve, the same two symmetries as we derived in the gauge loops. So the calibration equation tells you that the almost complex structure on the world sheet is the same as the fallback of the almost complex structure in space, which is the equation that I wrote down here. So this whole, so we're saying that we know, we just have this very simple first order equation for this for the string in ADS 5 plus 5, which is much simpler than general equation of motion. This expression also allows us to simplify the expression of the classical action, which should be related to the expectation of the Wilson loop. But unfortunately, we don't have a way of evaluating it without solving the equation of motion so far. So, and we don't know if that can be done.
Sorry.
Yes.
So the almost complex structure you have on ADS4 plus S2 is presumably not integral.
No.
No, it's not integral on ADS3.
No, it's not integral.
And what consequences does that have?
The consequence is the action is not zero, or it's not just the boundary term. So this whole construction mimics a paper from Pastena and some collaborators where they studied the Wilson loops that I mentioned at the beginning of, that Zaremba constructed. And there, they have a much simpler complex structure that just relates ADS coordinates and sphere coordinates in a very simple area. And that one is integrable, and then they find that they can just calculate the action straight away from that. And the action is just here, the area of the world sheet is just equal to the divergence and the circumference of the curve on the boundary, and therefore the, once you subtract that, the expectation value of the Wilson loop is 1. Well, the area of the regularized area is 0, the expectation value of the Wilson loop is 1. Here, you get such a boundary term, but in addition, there is a non-trivial term which will give you a fine connection. And I think this is related to the non-trivial value of this almost complex term.
Also, this equation So that's that you're asking the student to back one complex structure to the other person. You're not asking for the map to be told to work.
Right. There are no other questions, I will switch now the subject a little bit and become much more about much simpler things. And I'll go over some examples. So if I lost some of you, you can come now and place where you can choose to reconnect if you want. So if I have a curve on a street, it's a circle, a large circle. And if it's in the x1, x2 plane, you're going to need to see that these guys, sigma 1, sigma 2, will be 0, and sigma 3 is going to be constant. So a circle will couple only to a single scalar. So this is what I told you at the beginning, was the fact that it's a circle, which is different from the quarter-scale circle if we use the other construction. And it's a very interesting observable, and it preserves half specifically this subgroup of PSGPT4. I've studied this group a lot in the past. An interesting observation made by Gladstone, Samenov, and Zelenko was that when you calculate this group in perturbation theory and you include the scalar exchange and the occasional exchange, you get an effective propagator where the scalar exchange, well, since I have only one scalar, is 1 divided by the square of the distance. The occasional exchange and time decay is the product of the tangent vector divided by the distance. If I expand this, I get 2 times the dot product of the vectors. But the dot product of the vectors is the same as the dot product of the tangent vector. So this is just a constant. So this means that summing up Langer diagrams is the same as doing calculation in 0 dimensions. The 0-dimensional Gauss matrix, just summing up non-attracting graphs with the constant propagator. To get the narrow matrix was by this matrix in these matrices. And there is an exact solution to this integral, and write as a Dallier polynomial, and then you can expand it at large n and large g squared n, and compare it with string theory in the S5×5, and all the comparisons work. In particular, there is an interesting calculation using a V3 frame, which is related to this Wilson loop in the high dimensional symmetric representation, but effectively it can capture all the monogram corrections to this Wilson loop. And it exactly agrees with this matrix model calculation. So that was the half-cube guess. A circle, which is one example of this class. Now let's look at a new family of closed loops that has not been studied before. And I want to ask if there is any other curve that will couple only to the 5-3. And for that, you can write your coordinates on S3, the Cartesian coordinates, in terms of the Euler angles. And if you keep theta and phi fixed while varying phi, while varying psi, you can discover that you will only couple to phi 3. And the reason is that all these curves, the constant theta and phi, varying psi, are phi x is a half vibration of S3, which is related to choosing one of the invariant waterfalls. So there was the one, there was the circle of the 1-2 plane, but you can also take the circle of the 3-4 plane, and you will get the same coupling to 5-3. And you can also take circles in the middle. This combined system of circles and fibers and the number of circles like this will preserve 8 supercharges, so it's 4 PPS. And what's quite amazing is that in this case, the propagator between the effect propagator and the combined engaged field and the scalar between any two points on any two of the circles is still the same constant as before. So, we haven't checked it beyond that, but then the expectation is that this is just related to the correlator of a number of different Boltzmann loops in the same matrix model. The interaction between different loops itself, of course, it can be something. It can be a more complicated matrix model, it can be more complicated, it doesn't have to be really zero-dimensional if you include interactions. But this is the simplest check. That's the simplest possibility. And in string theory, it will be given at the paper level by K-extended string surfaces. So here we have an analog of parallel lines. These circles are parallel to each other. It doesn't matter how far you take them away from each other on this street. The propagator is the same. The interaction is constant. Another family is where I instead of considering the curve on S3, I restrict to a large S2 and S3. Then the left forms of S3 are equal to the right forms of S3. And they are essentially just the cross product of X to Dx. So, since I have also sigma L, I also have the two chiral supercharges. So this system has 4 supersymmetries instead of the 6. There's an interesting fact whose significance we don't exactly understand is if you take a curve X and the gauge coupling will be X dot, and the scalar coupling is X cross X dot. What I said here. But now consider a dual curve whose gauge coupling is this. Then the scalar coupling will be this cross the time derivative of this. Whichever can hear. And this turns out to be proportional to x. So you can start. So you can start either with a path for the gauge fields, and you have this gives you some a curve on the for the scalars, and if you start with that curve for the scalars, you end up with the same curve for the gauge fields. So there is some duality here between the scalars and the gauge fields. Some special examples on S2 is if you consider a latitude line and an angle theta naught, the scalar couplings will also follow the circle at time 2 times theta naught. If the circle is on the equator, that's a big circle. And this, the scalar coupling will be at the north pole, but be a constant. That will just then have to be a circle. When I take the limit of theta not going to zero, I get an infinitesimal circle here. This circle grows. And that is the quarter PPS circle that Zarathustra's construction. But in general, these are always equal to yes, no matter which latitude you set up. Again, the amazing fact is that the propagator is still a constant. But now it's not the same constant, if we scale by sine squared theta naught. And then, if you go and do the calculation in string view, you can do it exactly. And there is going to be some surface in ABS that is actually not really, doesn't really depend on what happens with the scalar. And then on S2, you just wrap the part of the sphere. Actually, you have two solutions, either around in the northern hemisphere or the southern hemisphere, one will be stable and one not. And the combined system will have action which will be squared of lambda, squared of g squared n, and you always get a string theory time, transfer down to the sine theta naught. And you see that it's again a scaling of g squared n to g squared n times sine squared theta naught. And we can do this also with a D3 frame and refine the same solution with all the corrections in 1 over n. So it seems to completely work like the happy PS case. There is even an argument why how you can calculate the 1 over the alpha prime correction, the 1 over square root of lambda corrections. I will not go over that. Also, all for us interpretation theory. Okay. Now, I'm going to go over many of the examples on S2 because I will later have the last 5 minutes. I will say some general statements about S2. And the next case that is interesting is if I take two large circles on S2, they will intersect. And then I can take half of them, the two halves. So I have a curve going from the North Pole to the South Pole, then back to the South Pole to the North Pole for two longitudes. Each of the circles, or half circles, but half of the supersymmetry, the combined system, is polar EPS. The scalar complex along each of them is a constant, so I just have 2 points here on the S5 side. The scalar or S5 side. What's cute about this system is that I can do a stereographic projection. And then I get, if I project from the north to south pole, these will become straight rays with a fixed angle delta between them. And along each of the rays, I have a constant in the scalar coupling. And this is exactly what a Zarembo would tell me if I took a loop on the thing. And what the scalar couplings, or if I took these two rays and the thing, what the scalar couplings should be. So in that case, the both solutions would be 1, exactly. But on S2, after the stereographic projection, it is not. And actually, you can calculate it in perturbation theory in the first term that you get is this, 4 delta times 2 pi minus delta. This is another example that we could calculate exactly in string theory, and there we get the result of square root of delta times the square root of the same combination. So, as in the case of the latitude, it seems here that all I'm getting is the same answer as before, with g squared of n replaced by g squared of n times some complex, some geometric function. Here the delta times 2 pi minus delta, there it was sine squared theta naught. Let me skip this to get to the point about S2. There is a way just to recover the loops of the Zarembo directly from somewhat reactive by considering very small loops, then you don't see any more curvature of S3, and you get its instruction where instead of these one forms, you get the exact differentials of these things. Okay. So now we're going to try to relate a Wolfson loop on S2 that n equals 4 young hills with its funny scalar puppet to two-dimensional young hills. So I told you that a loop on S2 will have a scalar coupling, which is the cross product of the vector and the direction vector. And now I can do the same trick that I did for the circle. And look at the combined propagator of the gauge field and the scalar. So for the gauge field, I get the product of the two tangent vectors. For the scalar exchange, I get the product of these two things along the two points. Where I'm not taking the propagator. And both of them are divided by the distance. So some simple cross product of manipulations gives you this result. I have the tangent vector at point 1, the tangent vector at point 2. So this is important that the tangent vector appears both here and here. So the tangent vector appears twice here, and the tangent vector appears twice there. So the tangent vector sits in front, and then I get this combination, the delta function, and then some function of the distance. And the location of 1, the location of 2 divided by the distance. So I started with two propagators in 4 dimensions, and now I get an effective propagator. See, there is a tangent vector here. Just like an H propagator, these has space-time indices on S2, and the dimension of this guy is 0. A propagator for a gauge field in 4 dimensions, that's the dimension in the configuration space, that's dimension 2. A propagator in dimension 0 looks like a propagator in 2 dimensions. So, in fact, you can show that this is a propagator for a gauge field on S2, 2 dimensional propagator. For gauge theory on S2. If you're concerned about overall dimensions, I use always sphere of radius 1. Otherwise, you get the radius appearing somewhere. Okay, so from this, I conclude that the sum of the quadratic graphs of the Wolfson restricted to S2 will agree with the non-incorrect graphs of two-dimensional integrals. And two-dimensional integrals is solved, and there is an answer in the plane. It's just going to be a confined result due to the area. Now, on S2, it's much more complicated in result, but for a small loop, you can just take the flat space result. But this does not agree with the AES calculation that we had. And this is actually this discrepancy. It appears already in two-dimensional young hills. And there are several ways of calculating the theory, the perturbation theory. And the one that gives the correct result, the confinement, with that high hope. But if you use other restrictions for the propagators, you get a different result. And in particular, this kind of propagator will not give you the correct result. It will give you a different result. And this was explained by Zedman Vivoro, that this propagator does not capture non-perturbative effects in two-dimensional hills.
So
different parameters in different gauges?
It's not gauge, the description for okay, how to handle it has to do with the a host solved the theory by using a Lightcon gauge, which you can do in Kosky space. His prescription does not, it's really hard to translate to Euclidean space. If you try to use a Lightcon gauge or any other gauge in Euclidean space, you have some problems. It has similarities to Lightcon, and if you treat them the natural way to treat them, you get the propagator, the form that I wrote before. And that propagator does not capture non-perfect rates. So the explanation of Stefan Trigorov yesterday, which is what I'm saying now, is completely within rudimentariness, has nothing to do with my discussion really, is that this problem, a propagator of this form, will give you the result of two-dimensional invariance without monomials. The two-dimensional invariance, if you do it on S2, it will have monomials, but you can there is the expansion that Wittgen wrote of the exact result in terms of the sum over sample points. And then you can restrict, what they did was restrict to the trivial sample point with no example, expand, and you find the result that you get by using the operator of this one. So, it's a different description. So, what am I finding here is that this propagator, what I said here, okay, then it's the same as two-dimensional pills. It's the same as two-dimensional pills in a perturbative sense as this perturbation expansion for two-dimensional pills. It doesn't include non-perturbative functions. So, if you solve two-dimensional MLs using a propagator of that type, you get an expression like this. Here again, you have a Ranieri polynomial, and you get a function of the two areas bound by your loop. So if you're on a sphere, a loop will define two areas, A1 and A2, and what you get is a function of A1 times A2. And you can expand this, and this, by the way, is the exact same result that you get from the Gaussian matrix model, where you replace the coupling by the coupling times A1 times A2. And here is what you get from perturbation theory. You can see G squared n times A1 and A2. And you expand that at weak coupling, and when you expand that at strong coupling, you get exponential 1 over 2 pi in G squared n. It's squared G squared F A1 and 2. Again, G squared F times A1 and 2. That complication always appears in this solution. So I had some examples, and this result of the perturbative 200 meals agrees with all of them. For the half PPM circle, it was sitting on the equator. So A1 and A2 are 2 pi. They're the area of the hemisphere. And then I just have here a 2 pi, 2 pi, divided by 2 pi, so I squared, G squared. For the latitude, I have two areas, A1 and A2, and 2 pi times 1 plus minus the cosine theta naught. So when I'm at the North Pole, A1 is 0, and A2 is 4 pi, the equator is 2 pi each. When I multiply the two, I get 4 pi squared, and sine squared theta naught. So that is this reflection g squared goes to squared theta naught, which I find both from the gauge theory for all the Lattice diagrams and from string theory, including one friend fractions. For the latitude, where I don't have all order calculation, we have that A1 is 2 times delta. That's the opening angle between the two longitudes. And A2 is twice times 2 pi minus delta. That's the other angle in the other direction. I multiply the two, I get delta times 2 pi minus delta. So it's again the same reflection, and this was the function that we found there. So we don't have more evidence. What we have is the perturbative results for the Lattice diagram. The property agrees with this perturbative description of the MLs. And in all the cases where we know how to do the ABS results, including this case for the and actually where we know how to do it with the B3 friend, which gives extra information, it agrees with the perturbative result of two-dimensional animals and large. So, this is all I want to say. So, I presented an infinite family of symmetricals and loops. Most of them have not been known before. And the trick is always to choose your loop on X3 in space and adjust the scale of couplings to the supersymmetry. This is the generalization of the Lamplugh ideal. But what's new here is that the expectation value is not trivial. So there are many new interesting observables that may be calculated in gauge theory and in AES. And they can also be calculated in topological theory, and this is exactly the region where it's fun to work, where you have non-trivial results, but you have hope that they're exact. In AES 5 plus 5, there's a very elegant structure, it's with the almost complex structure. Calibration equations gives the symmetry. And we also have a reasonably simple expression for the action, but unfortunately we don't have a full result for a general curve. And some configurations I have described, the first of them are the top fibers of S3, which is quarter PPS and is a generalization of parallel lines in the flat space. There is often magnitude of the distance. For any curve on S2, the supersymmetry is doubled, so we have 4 supercharges, and specific examples like the longitude or the latitude or 1/4 PPS. And for a general curve on S2, we have this evidence that some evidence that we agree with that in this perturbative result for two-dimensional animals. And this means, if this is correct, this means that there is a subsector of the involved theory, n equals 4, which is invariant under area preserved diffeomorphisms, which is quite peculiar because it's invariant under changing angles and it's invariant under changing distances, so it looks like it's invariant under everything. But I find this quite confusing. It's not inconsistent, but it's just very weird that conformal theory would have some sector that is invariant under diffeomorphisms. So that's all.
Any questions?
Do you have more direct understanding of why for this set of operators and angles for reduces to the angle?
Um, My guess is that this might come out of studying a lot of theories. And I don't know. And, well, you can say these are the simplest observables you can define on S2, so we should have a simple two-dimensional description. They do. But nothing deeper than that. About topological theory. So we don't know what the analog for S3, for example, is. I expect there also to be a simple three-dimensional theory describing those. And the reason is when you have the topological theory, you expect to be able to integrate out all the models that are not really related to this. And this combination of Q and X is really restricting you, because they have Q and S have different dimensions. So you're really setting a radius in that combination, Q plus S. So it's R squared Q plus S3. So you're fixing a radius, and therefore I expect that all the operators that are, well, that this topological theory will secretly be a theory in three dimensions. All the other degrees of freedom and four dimensions would be, you could integrate them away to the subspace. So that's why I expect a three-dimensional surface, and then a three-dimensional field in this case, when I'm just on this, it turns out to be two-dimensional field.
Any more questions? If there are no questions, let's take this degree.